Hello, boils and ghouls, as I am legally required to call you for this month. I am your, I guess, booze dude, Cody Ghoston. This is a Haiti episode. Stop that. Stop it. Listen, here's some news. I know you're all excited for Halloween, but we're not quite there yet. We'll do costumes next week, I promise. But first, we have to talk about Haiti. And that's not very scary, or rather, it's very scary, but not in the way I think you're gonna like. I guess there are a couple horror movies based in the country, like White Zombie and The Serpent and the Rainbow, two films made nearly 60 years apart, and yet both are about Haitian magic enslaving white people, as if we were really scared of that for some reason. Oh, also both came out around two separate times the U.S. was occupying Haiti in order to influence their government. That is odd. That's an odd coincidence. Okay, holy shit. So where to begin? Apologies if this is personally inaccurate to you, but this booze dude is guessing that the majority of people watching and or listening to this have a limited knowledge of Haiti, just as I still do, and so we're probably gonna have to start from the top. But before that, to sum up the current situation in the country, bad things just keep happening in Haiti. I don't know, maybe because of some shaman curse, or hundreds of years of white occupation? I don't know, one of the two, but currently, the country was hit by two entirely different natural disasters in just the span of 3 days. The first being a magnitude 7.2 earthquake that struck on August 14th and ended up killing more than 2,200 people and injuring over 12,000, causing an immediate overflow to hospitals, over $1 billion in damage, including contamination of drinking water that now threatens at least 500,000 children. Also, this is early estimates, and the total deaths might be significantly more. And that was just the first disaster, because on August 17th, Haiti was then hit by Tropical Storm Grace, causing rescue efforts to slow down on account of the second disaster. You know, it's hard to deal with the first disaster while you're literally in the middle of another disaster. Did I mention that their president was assassinated a month earlier? That's probably important. Boy, I am tired. Time to wrap it up. This has been a dark and harrowing look at the many problems facing this country. But at least we're almost done, since we've been talking about this for an entire few minutes. I'm gonna need a snack for this, hold on. Okay, that is better. And just because it's candy doesn't mean this is Halloween themed. I simply switched to an all-candy diet for September and October, like many Americans who observe this time a little more seriously than others. All right, we're charged and we're talking about Haiti. I mean, I've personally been feeling pretty jittery and weak for the last few weeks for some reason, but generally speaking, we're all energized at this moment for an amount of time. Now, you might feel like this news of Haiti and earthquakes feels a little familiar, a little retro, perhaps, like a throwback to the early 10s. And that's because in 2010, a 7.0 earthquake also hit the island nation due to the exact same fault line, resulting in the deaths of over 316,000 people. This single event was so incredibly devastating that even as this recent, as in the 2021 earthquake hit, many in the country were still recovering from the one a decade previous. The 2010 earthquake destroyed so many homes that 1.5 million Haitians were displaced and forced to live in camps, something the country struggled to rectify for many years afterward. And while many countries responded with aid and money at the time, the rebuilding process would ultimately take longer than our attention spans. And as I'm sure you already guessed, that process was riddled with hilariously avoidable problems. For example, when the Government Accountability Office investigated the progress made by the United States Agency for International Development, they found that they had greatly underestimated the cost of rebuilding efforts, causing a much smaller number of homes built than what they had promised. On top of that, many of the construction contractors went to U.S. companies and not companies in Haiti, effectively excluding any efforts to rebuild their local economy. Because of course we did that. Of course that when the Red Cross raised nearly $500 million for Haiti recovery, we would learn 5 years later that money would translate to the building of exactly 6 permanent houses. 6. Not 666, because that would be too spooky right now, but as in the single digit number, 6. because nearly all of the billions ultimately promised would end up mysteriously vanishing over the next few years. And we're certainly going to talk about more of that later. But it's extremely important to note that between these two life-changing earthquakes, Haiti experienced an absolute onslaught of hurricanes and floods that regularly pummeled the already fragile infrastructure and economy of the country. Imagine a sandwich where the two slices of bread are made of molten hot farts, two glowing globs of fiery poo air, and everything in between is just rusty needles. That's what Haiti has been forced to eat. So what this all comes down to is that Haiti, a country where in 2005 most citizens were living off less than $2 a day, descended even deeper into poverty. Nearly half of the population is currently going hungry, a million of that in situations that are classified as emergency cases. This is where I'd normally put a bunch of donation links, but it seems like there's a problem, actually, getting that money to the country. You know? Still, here. Could we please lose the Halloween theme? Holy shit, you guys. Holy shit. Inappropriate. What this all comes down to is a cycle of poverty for Haiti, a country that imports four times more than what it exports, where more and more people are forced to choose between their kids going to school and their kids eating food, and of course those kids going on to be stuck in that same cycle, all of it leading to increased violent crime, which leads to fewer people on the streets, which leads to fewer people working, and once again, more poverty. And of course, all of it made even worse by this most recent earthquake. But hey, at least on top of all this poverty, this fart and needle sandwich of disasters, Haiti also enjoys massive corruption in its government. Do you recall that presidential assassination I breezed past earlier? That was former Haiti president Jovenel Moïse, who was in office since 2017. And we should probably talk about that guy, because on July 7th of this year, a group of gunmen entered the president's home and proceeded to shoot him 12 times. What we would later learn is that these men were recruited from outside the country by four different companies. According to interviews, many of them believed they were hired for security, while only a few knew the actual plan. And the man who had allegedly hired them was Christian Emmanuel Sanon, a Haiti-born doctor who was, and this is a pretty neat detail, an American citizen. Sanon had flown to Haiti during this time and planned to assume the presidency in place of Moïse. Now, there's a whole lot of details I just can't get into here, but it's important to note that these men were all allegedly funded by Walter Ventimiglia, president of Worldwide Mortgage Lending Group, a fucking mortgage company out of Florida. And for the record, Walter's lawyers are claiming that he knew nothing about the assassination, while still totally admitting that he was knowingly funding a transfer of power in Haiti. It seems that some of the people involved simply thought they were overthrowing the government, as opposed to flat out killing the president. And I don't know, that sort of feels like splitting hairs. And while I can't stress enough that this is an ongoing investigation and filled with complicated details and motives and conflicting stories and allegedlies and supposings and etc., the uncontested detail that this started from a group of Americans involving themselves in Haiti's politics is pretty much a microcosm of the entire recent history of this country. Also, less recent events. And boy, we will be getting to that. Oh boy, too bad you're gonna have to. In fact, Jovenel Moïse himself only rose to power thanks to a chain reaction started by American politicians. For context, Moïse began his 2016 campaign as a banana farmer sworn to clean up Haiti from corruption, only for corruption and crime to rise considerably during his presidency. Just a few years after his inauguration, Moïse would be implicated in an embezzlement scandal involving money given for infrastructure support from $2 billion in Venezuelan oil loans. This was money Haiti received following the 2010 earthquake, money that, under Moïse's predecessor, had already been heavily embezzled. And speaking of Moïse's predecessor, part of the controversy around Moïse's election win had to do with rumors that he was actually handpicked by Haiti's former president, Michel J. Martelly, who stepped down in 2016 after those aforementioned accusations of massive corruption. And so Moïse's victory would be riddled with accusations of fraud and a ton of protests. But ultimately, Moïse maintained his power up until the moment he didn't. And so, going back to Michelle J. Martelli, the corrupt president before Moise, who allegedly orchestrated his predecessor's win, well, he is a whole other can of sketchy little worms. Before he was sworn in as president in 2011, Martelli was more commonly known as a pop music star from the 90s, a charismatic new president who would, in his first year, immediately descend the recovering country into rage and corruption. And I don't know, maybe there's like a really too little too late message there about electing celebrities to run the country, but that's not the point. We don't have to talk about that guy, I promise. You are extremely welcome. What I'm getting to here is the extremely suspect presidential election of Michelle Joseph Martelli, one happening less than a year after Haiti was devastated by the 2010 earthquake. Things were not good for the country, and the US was still in the middle of sending aid. Specifically, the Clinton Foundation was heavily involved in Haiti, and boy, were they talking a big game, including using the phrase building back better in their promises to help the country because yum yum, we love it. Gobble, gobble, gobble. And so the election took place, resulting in a tie between three candidates who had yet to reach the percentage of votes needed to win, Michelle Martelli being the one who received the least amount of votes. At the time, this seemed to imply that he would be edged hot out of, dang, any runoff hot election. Okay. However, the Organization of American States disputed that claim, saying that Martelli should actually be included in the runoff and that he'd actually come in second. We would later learn that the OAS was totally wrong about this. But at the time, current Haitian president René Préval went with the OAS ruling, but only after being paid a visit by the current Secretary of State under Obama, a one Hillary Clinton, who, and this is all real life, reportedly threatened to cut aid to the country if Préval didn't go with OAS's stance. I don't know, maybe she just wanted them to hurry it up, or I don't know, maybe we'd find out later that Michelle Martelli's campaign was being funded by the United States Agency for International Development. I don't know, who can say. Interesting thing about the USAID, an agency we've occasionally discussed in the past, is that it is, in part, not always, but has been and can be, a front for the CIA. Dating back to the Cold War, it has functioned as a friendly face for American interests abroad, the smiling plastic lips on the globby potato head of American interventionism. The thing of the stuff. And we could talk for quite a while about this agency's activities, like the Office of Public Safety, a program in the 60s and early 70s that used American police, many from the LAPD, to train police officers and military personnel overseas, which revealed torture methods and brutality. Interesting how much we moralize about how other countries' police treat their citizens, considering we trained some of them. Weird how one of America's main exports seems to be brutality. But anyway, after training other countries' cops how to be pigs, the program was phased out starting in 1974. Not because of any admission of wrongdoing, but to save face from the allegations. To quote a State Foreign Relations Committee report, quote, "It matters little whether the charges can be substantiated. They inevitably stigmatize the total United States foreign aid effort." And nothing ever stigmatized United States foreign aid effort ever again. Star wipe, iris out. Anyway, there are more instances of USAID beyond that. We won't give a long list, but for example, their involvement, knowingly or not, in the Peruvian government's family planning program in the mid-90s, also known as thousands of cases of forced sterilization for which the victims have still not seen justice. Or, even more recently, and more hilariously, in 2010, the USAID created a fake social media platform in Cuba called Zunzunio. The platform was created shortly after a USAID contractor was arrested in Cuba on a separate clandestine USAID mission. The so-called Cuban Twitter was meant to spark a Cuban spring and revolution. It did not, though it did embarrass the USAID, which totally doesn't do stuff like this ever before or still now. Anyway, this is not to completely negate the helpfulness of every single action of the agency, but given that, and their funding of Martelli's campaign, and their recent reports on Afghanistan, perhaps it's all useful to help more clearly see the immense tapestry that is American interventionism. But to get us back on track, the USAID funded Martelli's failed campaign, Secretary of State Clinton threatened to withhold aid if Martelli wasn't included in the runoff, and now here we are, back. And boy, it sure seems like those Clintons had a great deal of influence in Haiti, despite not, like, being from there and actually being United States politicians. And I think they're married. It feels like there's a whole video we could do on the Clintons and Haiti at some point. A lot of reading out there. But we still have a bunch of other stuff to talk about. Because it's sure interesting that we tried to give and sometimes withhold all this aid to and from their country, and none of it actually helped their citizens. And, like, there's a really long history of the U.S. directly involving ourselves with the results of their elections. And these natural disasters seem to be used as leverage points for power grabs while callously ignoring the victims. I think I need more candy. And while I know this might seem, tonally abrupt, but what we're gonna do now is take a short break and cut to an ad for products and or services and or distractions to get you through the monotonous toil of the daily grind, and then we'll come back with more talk about, you know, depressing stuff and Haiti and stuff. BRB, you love sex! Love! Hello, everybody out there in TV land. I'm Cody.
I'm Katie.
And this is where the advertisements usually go, but not for you, because you are a patron.
And we love you very much.
Much. Ugh, that really hit the spot. It's sugar water. I can't get enough of this stuff. I feel like a fucking ant, all tiny and scared and shit. So, perhaps it's time for a history lesson about Haiti. You know how you love history and lessons? Well, I can be like your cool teacher who dresses up as famous historical figures and raps about Shakespeare and gets arrested senior year for selling drugs and hanging out with the students after school, a made-up scenario that did not happen. Anywho, we're not gonna cover, like, everything in Haiti's history. This isn't some report for creepy Mr. Clubley's class. We'll just cover some of the relevant sections. In this case, relevant sections referring to all of the times white people showed up and made things worse, which is, it's a lot of times. We're probably not even going to cover all of those specific times. Though this, of course, started with the Mickey Mouse of fucking over natives, Christopher Columbus, who arrived in Haiti in December of 1492, pleasantly exchanged gifts with the Taino Arawak people, and then wrote to Queen Isabella of Spain, reporting that he had met a tractable and easily led group of people who could be made to sow crops and build cities. Thanks, Chris. Really glad we still have a holiday in your honor. Literally nobody else could or would have discovered those massive continents. And so what followed was about 200 years of slavery and genocide that we don't have to go into the details of because we can't besmirch the good people at
some more new sponsor of episode.
But nevertheless, rest assured, the details would in fact make you vomit your soul to hear about. After that, Spain ceded the island to France, who renamed their new possession as Saint-Domingue. By 1754, there were roughly 172,000 slaves enduring various levels of rape, torture, and genocide. Wow, this tractable and easily led group of people sure could be made to grow crops and build cities, huh? It was, to put it lightly, an extremely dark time. As the colony grew to become the richest in all of France's territory, Saint-Domingue became the number one hotspot for unspeakable horror. Slaves were mutilated, burned alive, literally tied up and smeared with molasses so they could be eaten alive by ants. The French were known to simply work their slaves to death and buy new ones, making the average span between servitude and the grave mere years. Overall, a total of 1 million slaves would die in the 100 years of French rule. Super, super not good. I'm not just saying all this to bum you out, of course, but to explain why in 1791, the slaves of Saint-Domingue made the strategic decision to rise the fuck up and say, wait, actually, nuh-uh. This is the Haitian Revolution, a 13-year conflict between Haitian slaves and French and British pissheads that resulted in the first country to be founded by former slaves, and as a result, the first country to ban slavery. This happened in their very first constitution in 1805, nearly 60 years before the United States Civil War. And boy, Let me tell you, Chief, the United States wasn't too happy about this. Along with hurting them economically, the Haitian Revolution sparked a lot of fear in American slave owners, who attempted to downplay or suppress news of a revolt. Jean-Jacques Dessalines, the founding father of the Haitian Revolution and super cool-looking guy, even wrote to Thomas Jefferson as their constitution was being made, only to get absolutely no response back. This can maybe tell us a little something about United States Founding Fathers' actual view of slavery. Those dudes loved writing letters. It's like the main thing they did. But despite America's best efforts, this revolution would be known to American slaves and seen as inspiration for their own emancipation. The irony in all of this is that this revolution would end up greatly benefiting the United States, not just in the slave trade industry, but because when Napoleon attempted to reclaim the former Saint Domingue, he got his ass kicked so fucking hard that he ran out of resources and ended up selling a bunch of land to the United States, specifically all of this land. You know, like some kind of like Louisiana purchasization, as they say. Napoleon would go on to disappear for a few days, presumably out of embarrassment, before suddenly reemerging with a newfound love of water slides.
Mon Dieu!
Seems like a good ending, right? Haiti got their independence, America got a bunch of land, and Napoleon went on a time-traveling adventure. But here's where things get absolutely fucking still not good. Unsurprisingly, France was a tad bit sore about the whole getting their asses kicked thing. America wasn't too happy either. And so a blockade was issued by both the US and France, cutting off resources to the newfound country. Then, in 1814, King Louis XVIII sent several commissioners to perhaps, maybe discuss letting France enslave the country again. And when Haiti refused, you know, because of the slavery thing, France insisted that Haiti at least pay them back for the money they lost for both the Louisiana Purchase and the abolished slave trade. In order to avoid war and further blockades, Haiti was forced to agree to this debt, which translated to today money would equal roughly $28 billion. This absolutely unreal situation would go on to drain the country of Haiti for well over a century until they managed to pay off their debt in 1947. 19 goddamn 47. The same era where Abbott and Costello were opening up diplomacy with Frankenstein to stress how recent that really was. Because in all that time, no one stopped to think how incredibly fucked up it was that a country was being extorted for their own revolution from horrific slavery. In fact, to this day, France never paid Haiti back this money that they blatantly extorted from a country they had already spent 100 years brutalizing. And I don't know, maybe we should ask them super nice to do that. Urge them, or less nice? However we ask them, they should perhaps pay that back, is my point. But also, and this is the big old cherry, Haiti's debt was financed through various different banks, some of which have since repaid what they were given. But one of the larger banks that did this was something called the National City Bank, later renamed to the National City Bank of New York, and finally renamed to something called Citigroup, or better known as Citibank. You know, that bank some of all of us are using. A bank that, like many banks, grew in power thanks to this and other slave trade as part of the growing and founding of America. And this is the kind of disgusting critical race theory they're trying to truth your kids with. A truth we should ban from schools lest we get too spooky. And so, to recap a bit, the United States passively supported the French aggression against Haiti during the revolution while simultaneously benefiting from their independence before helping to loot the country for an additional 100+ years and spiraling the country into debt like something out of the fucking Sopranos. During this time of debt, the US would go on to buy up the country's treasury bonds and anything they could to financially handcuff themselves to Haiti. In the later 1800s, when we were suddenly into guano mining, America simply actually sent companies to Haiti to take their resources. In the early 1900s, Woodrow Wilson would grow concerned of outside influences to the country, and in response, sent U.S. Marines into Haiti to literally remove $500,000 from the Haitian National Bank for what the U.S. Office of the Historian would refer to as for safekeeping. We United Statesians sure do hate outside influencers, huh? We really grinds our gears. Hey, that's our thing. So I guess if you were wondering at all why Haiti was already nipples deep in poverty before the 2010 earthquake, well, congratulations on the wonders of learning. I can feel my blood. It's awesome. And so here we are, amid these multiple disasters and corruption and assassinations, continuing to siphon money from the tragedies in Haiti. When the 2010 quake hit, one of the more immediate responses was a series of scam donation sites that simply existed to make money from phony relief efforts. But the grift doesn't stop at the low level. As I already mentioned, a ton of Red Cross money just vanished after this point. Over $10 billion was pledged by governments, citizens, and private companies after 2010, and as we can see with just our fucking eyeballs, that money never actually went to the people of Haiti. So, where did it go? Did the Kraken get it? Was the money haunted and no one wanted to claim it? Unfortunately, the answer wasn't that spooky. Again, not a Halloween episode. As concluded by the 2012 study by Tulane University, the money we sent was more than enough to help the immediate needs of the affected areas, and yet in some cases actually did more harm than good. As I already mentioned, a lot of this cash got slurped up by corrupt politicians. However, an investigation by The Guardian found that about 94% of humanitarian funding simply went to the lower levels of whatever entity people donated to. Outside contractors and private companies completely removed from Haiti's economy were hired. And in a lot of cases, the trail of receipts would just go cold. For some profoundly wild reason, we don't keep track of where donations go after they are donated. And this is probably a fun time to mention that disaster relief is currently a booming industry that's getting the attention of private equity firms and Wall Street monsters. If you're looking for a career that isn't going away anytime soon, perhaps go into disaster relief instead of a dying industry like building roads, anything with water, or internet comedy writing. And so, much like what happened in Afghanistan, all the money that was supposed to help was either juggled around through various government entities, embezzled by corrupt politicians, or filtered through a series of extraordinary greedy people farming off relief efforts to private companies of questionable quality. And so this is where I tell you about the Lambie Fund, an organization from Haiti that specifically helps fund actual local disaster relief efforts from actual local groups in Haiti. And perhaps if you want to donate to anyone, maybe, fuck the Red Cross, and these are the people you should donate to. And here's the link for that in full screen. Oh, right, I forgot we were still doing this, like, Halloween bit. I forgot a lot these days. Most of my hours are very blurry and involve a lot of crying.
I should make candy dinner soon.
But first, this isn't exactly over. And so we're going to do one more exciting ad break. Sorry about that. Hope it goes well. And then come back for the final Jeopardy or whatever is happening right now. Sorry, I'm very disoriented.
Hi, we're back as a placeholder for where the ads would be, but you don't have to deal with that because you are cool.
And we're back, and we're sexy and young, and our stomachs are trembling. Hope you enjoyed those ads, and this awkward transition from the ads to a really serious subject. Ha 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 ha. Now, I don't know if you've realized this yet, but all this history with Haiti, slavery and debt, Citibank totally sucking, and this budding industry of exploiting the country's natural disasters, it's all pretty darn emblematic of the larger issue with, and I hope this isn't too controversial, but capitalism and the white supremacy and Western chauvinism that fuels our racist capitalism. This is, after all, a cycle of debt and poverty being maintained by the US government and not unlike the cycle being maintained within our country. Haiti is a depressingly perfect model for what we do to certain citizens every fucking day, and that point is not lost on me. Specifically, there is a group of people that we, you know, enslaved not too long ago, and after that, spent way more time excluding them from any opportunities for advancing past a certain economic point. And that process created a cycle of poverty for them that's extremely hard to break, while certain whiter people amazingly blamed it on those people not pulling themselves up by their bootstraps hard enough. In the context of Haiti, this often looks like this.
To be fair to the president, some countries are really crappy, right? In Sudan, North Korea, Haiti is not a great place to live. It has a life expectancy of 63 years and an average annual GDP per capita of like $730. It's not a great place to live.
Gee, Ben, I wonder why that is. Ben was on Fox defending the comments of a certain president that I said I wouldn't talk about, where that certain president called Haiti a shithole country. Ben goes on to argue that it would be hard for Haitian immigrants to assimilate and speculates that issue is actually what the president was talking about. But what Ben is trying hilariously to claim is not really racist is clearer in the full context of the president's words, which were, "Why do we need more Haitians?" followed by, "Take them out," referring to excluding Haiti from any deals to allow more immigrants into the US. So the reasoning here is that since Haiti is a crappy country, they should be excluded? And neither Ben nor that certain president is remotely curious about why this country might be in such bad shape, because again, bootstraps, am I right? Clearly, these people can't be trusted with our country, since they messed up their country. And by they, I actually mean us. We messed up their country. And so here we are, watching these people swirl around in a cycle we created, shoving them right back into the cycle anytime one tries to break free with the excuse that it's somehow their fault. Or in other words, maintaining white supremacy. Because a long time ago, we got ahead of the game, and by Xenu, we're staying there, even if we absolutely cheated and exploited people along the way. And this is going to just keep on happening, more and more. And not just with this one country. What we're seeing with Haiti is just a small, sour taste of our future on a planet being gradually destroyed by climate change. In the case of Haiti, the problems are a lot of different things, as we just explained. But as more and more impoverished countries are affected by an increase in drought and storms and, I don't know, some kind of drought storm that, like, swoops by and steals your water, well, that disaster relief industry is just gonna grow and grow, while simultaneously not actually helping more and more areas. And it will happen in places in America, too. And we will, of course, continue to get more refugees from Haiti and other neighboring areas, and more Ben Shapiros making big boy smart arguments about why we shouldn't let them in, or do much to help domestically either, for some reason, and various presidents with various horrifying policies on keeping these people out. But maybe, with this current president, perhaps we can break that cycle.
They cross the Rio Grande River that forms the border between the US and Mexico, most of them Haitians, willing to take the chance that they will be processed and allowed in, willing to tolerate what's been described as a squalid existence here. It is these pictures of Border Patrol agents on horseback pushing migrants into the river that have caused so much anger. For some, they carry the echoes of the worst chapters of American history.
Oh, right, no, we're whipping them. Of course we're whipping them. But don't worry, folks, they weren't literally whips. And also, double don't worry, because the Biden administration took away the horses of those men, because that was obviously the thing we all had an issue with. I want to make some kind of goodbye horses joke, but I'm too busy struggling to contain my skull inside of my flesh. Because, like all the other stuff we did to Haiti and all the other countries we politically kneecapped, the US is also one of the largest contributors to the climate change that will inevitably displace billions of people that we certainly won't try to actually help and will almost certainly be wicked fucking racist toward when they hit our borders. This whole other aspect of the crisis in Haiti is, like so many other parts of this episode, something we could talk about for hours. But for the time being, to focus on Haiti itself, I sure think it's pretty fucking impossible that after everything I've told you about the US's long history with crippling their economy and politics, we're now turning back Haitian immigrants at the border. And did I say impossible? Because I meant ha 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 ha. Of course we're turning back these people who have traveled through 11 countries to get here and are being put on planes against their will and flown all the way back to the country we fucked over. It's another of those things we just love to do. Oh, hey, also, fun fact, the mechanism that Joe Biden just used to, perhaps illegally, send back thousands of Haitian immigrants is a public health law known as Title 42, the exact same method that Donald Trump used to deport people back during the height of the coronavirus, despite the CDC saying that it wasn't an effective technique. Yeah, well, I lied. Just like Biden lied when he promised humane border laws, and when all the Dems lied and said they were mad that Donald Trump did this shit. As one Haitian immigrant put it, Biden called us, and then Biden betrayed us. That specific immigrant named Fagenson Ellie was actually living in Brazil when his sister-in-law told him that she had been allowed to migrate to Florida. But by the time Fagenson made it to the border, Biden had changed his policy, and he was arrested and flown back to Haiti. Which, if you recall, isn't Brazil, where he had been living for years. He is now broke and in a country he knows nothing about, and most notably, one of thousands dealing with this same problem. Meanwhile, as of recording this, the US has yet to send any funding to Haiti for disaster relief. Not that it'll actually go to the citizens anyway. So yeah, Biden, the bleeding heart Democrat that was supposed to move us away from the cruelty of Donald Trump, is, in the end, just another old, white, powerful guy upholding the American tradition of repeatedly pummeling a nation whose only crime was not wanting to be slaves. The cycle of imperialism and white American supremacy and our seemingly addictive need to control the lives of people we have no business controlling, so embedded in our country that it spans both political parties, built into the bones, so deep that I don't think half of the people in power even realize what they're doing. The cruelty's not the point, it's just how it is. Or maybe they do know. I don't know. I'm not a shaman blowing magic dust into Bill Pullman's face. Not yet, at least. Full circle joke. But the point is, it's ostensibly all the same. Trump said, we're full, go home. Kamala Harris says, do not come. Speaking of family planning, a little come joke for you. But here, we have the argument being, we're just too full. This enormous country, with huge pockets of sparsely populated land, no vacancy. Ironically, a lot of that sparsely populated land that's too full for Haitian migrants is kind of Louisiana Purchase-sized. Boom, full circle point. And listen, next episode will be more spooky, probably, maybe. I understand how brutal this one was, but also, kinda had to talk about it, right? So along with whatever monetary help we should, perhaps make it clear that we're not happy with this cycle, and like, point it out to people, this incredibly rigged game America is proudly atop of, and maybe France and those banks should pay Haiti back, like billions of dollars. And we should create a system holding these disaster relief groups accountable as that, business grows. Maybe we should have fewer businesses. Because we fucking plundered Haiti. A bunch of countries did, and we owe them way better than this. Better than the economic short straw we handed to them because a few hundred years ago, they happened to be a good spot to make sugar. Bam. Candy. It was a Halloween episode after all, but not really. I need a nap. I didn't actually eat the candy during the episode, so I get to eat it all now, and I'm gonna feel really good after it. Before it was acting, but now it's living! I'm living! Finally! Too much candy corn. Hey, like and subscribe, you piece of shit! I'm sorry. Thanks for watching the video. Leave a comment and be nice, even though I just wasn't to you. We've got a patreon.com/somemorenews. We've got a podcast, Even More News. We've got this podcast, Some More News, available where all of the podcasts are available, if you prefer that to what you just watched. So, still working on the candy corn issue. Love you a lot. Thanks. Got merch. And we got the news.